Okay, hello once again, and we're going to get started. I'm first going to turn it over to Dr. Richard Solomon, who's the president of USIP, and he will introduce Her Excellency Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Thanks.
Good afternoon, and we're delighted to have an overflow crowd for this very important event. As I think many of you with us today know, that this is the second what we call a virtual town hall meeting for the Liberian diaspora. Our first was in February of 2004 when the Institute hosted Chairman Charles Giudi Bryant. In November of this past year, Her Excellency Madam Ellen Johnson Sirleaf became the first democratically elected female president of Liberia, indeed the first in all of Africa. And that is something I know. She's just come from the White House meeting with the president, and this democratic success is something that's very important for Liberia, but it's also very important for the foreign policy hopes and goals of our own country. We're actually welcoming the president back to the Institute. She was here in December of 2002 when we gathered to discuss the issue of Liberia and instability in West Africa. Today, of course, we're very fortunate to be talking about a decidedly different Liberia. The elections of November of last year capped the end of a two-year transition process which followed 14 years of civil war. And very fortunately, Liberia is at peace today. But several challenges remain in consolidating that peace, including post-conflict reconstruction, institutional development, the reintegration of former combatants, and bringing justice to the victims of war. The Institute of Peace is pleased to be able to work along with Liberian colleagues in several important areas, particularly the area of legal reform. And our rule of law program has provided some thoughts about jury trial provisions. And this summer, the deputy director of our rule of law program, Colette Rausch, and several other colleagues will be going to Liberia to do a further study of the process of legal reform. So we're just delighted to have the president here for this virtual town hall meeting, and without taking up more of her valuable time or yours, we invite her to the microphone. I'd just like to make one very brief presentation. This is a very modest gift, but this is an Institute of Peace computer, and we only give this computer to very special guests, but it is very effective in communication, and so that anytime the president wants to communicate to us, all she has to do is use this very special computer. Madam President, thank you. Please.
Thank you very much. I'll use the computer with care. Whenever I start with a meeting like this, I like to start on a note of thank you, because I look around the room and I see so many faces, those who have been with us, those who have stood by us and stood by country generally, those who have prayed, agonized, suffered with us, and those who in the past recent months have just joined us in exhilaration for the potential and opportunities that the current situation represents. I don't have to tell you, most of you are very informed about where we are as we embark upon the long road of national renewal, national reconstruction. We have an economy that is depressed, one in which it has suffered decline for so many years as a result of slowdown in activity due to the conflict. We have a situation in which we've been unable to meet our international obligations, our employment rate, 80-85%, number of children enrolled in school, far below the average standard, infrastructure in a state of disrepair. We have a capital city, you well know, that's been dark for some 15 years, water system not operating. More importantly than the economic devastation is, of course, the quality of life. The value system transmuted over many years of violence, affected by a system of lawlessness and indiscipline, a lack of the ability to go to school, and all of that which has taken away the dignity of our people over so many years. A situation in which, although the last 2 years we had an opportunity as a result of the Accra peace talks to start anew, we did not measure up to the challenges. We found ourselves again slipping into some of the old habits and practices, and we lost a lot of support and the confidence of our partners that put us into a situation where we are today. But we do say that there is a window of opportunity, and all Liberians now can have hope, can have promise in the future. The challenges are many. There's first the challenge of peace and stability, as we can do nothing unless we're able to have people feel safe, that they have confidence that they have an environment and a government in which they won't have to run again, that they can pursue their endeavor, their career, their profession in that atmosphere of safety. And in that regard, we have to say that part of what keeps us confident is we do have a peacekeeping force, a UN peacekeeping force that is there, still one of the largest in the world, close to 15,000. We are in the process of restructuring our own security forces, have taken some tough decisions, total demobilization of an army, so that today we don't have an army, but in the process of recruiting and training an army to make it professional, to make it capable, a police force that's also going through screening and training process to professionalize and institutionalize them, auxiliary security service being subjected to the same thing. Where we have the process, the challenge of reconciliation, and that one, of course, must start with each Liberian. It's very difficult to legislate the ability to reach out to each other, to be one people. But we think that the Liberian people haven't long suffered, where conflict was no respecter of person, now know that unless we have national unity, unless we reach out one to the other in a spirit of contrition and forgiveness, that we will not be able to reach our national goals. To foster this, we have inducted into office the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which has as its mandate to investigate the root causes of conflict, to come up with the means whereby we can address those conflicts, to determine whether the system of justice goes hand in hand with the process of reconciliation and what's the balance to be able to achieve in our society what we want in terms of moving forward as one nation, one people. Obviously, one of our biggest challenges is the challenge of development and the economic reconstruction that's inherent in that. We are moving toward, first of all, what we've done is to try to put our economic and financial house in order, by composing a government that we feel as a team with the requisite competence, integrity, and concern about human rights, to be able to start that process of rebuilding a civil service which has indeed at its core service to the people. And that means efficiency and effectiveness in the management of our own resources. It means being able to start the process of reconstruction and looking at our infrastructure. We are trying to address the shortcomings in roads and telecommunication, in education, health facilities all over the country. We need to get many of our war-affected youth, the thousands and thousands of them who are out there and who are vulnerable, to recruitment again, to get them into productive endeavor, to get them into school, to get them into skills training program. All of those processes are ongoing. We have a program of structural reform. Much of that work started with the Governance Reform Commission, which many of you know I headed, and will be taken over by Dr. Amos Sawyer, who's going to head it along with others, such as Dr. Elwood Dunn, Dr. Baron Tarr. They will all be working with that commission, we are Dolly, to be able to come up with those measures, to look at constitutional reform, land reform, judiciary reform, civil service reform, all aimed at trying to put into place those structures, those systems, the policies and processes that will enable us to be efficient in being able to manage our economy to respond to our people. Obviously, we have to look at new political systems, and we may have to even be radical as we try to find those measures whereby never again in the history of our country will there be a monopolization of power and privilege by any one group, to make sure that everyone feels there's social equity, there's equal opportunity, each one has an equal stake, and each one at whatever level, at the center, at the periphery, have an opportunity to participate in a decision that affects their lives. Also, part of our challenge is to ensure that Liberia's own international creditworthiness is restored. Many of you know we've lost favor with many of our partners because of our lack of performance. In the financial area, our $3 billion-plus debt has not been serviced for several years, causing us to lose access to resources of multilateral and bilateral partners. We are once again trying to take those measures, first of all, domestic measures in terms of strengthening our own financial management systems. Going beyond that, trying to get back into favor with the Bretton Woods institutions through staff monitoring program, going the HIPIC route and making sure that we can get the relief mechanisms that exist. We've already met some of the requirements for the general system of preferences, and we hope we're well on the track to being eligible for AGOA, eligible for the Millennium Challenge account. We've started to also build bridges, to continue to build bridges. Some of it was built during the two transitional years, to build upon that which was done in terms of reaching out to our neighboring countries, making sure that we all together safeguard the sub-region, recognizing that no matter what we do, unless there's regional peace, and regional peace that leads to regional cooperation, possibly even regional integration, Liberia's own progress and own performance will be limited by the dynamics of what happens in the sub-region. We think the potential is great. We think Liberia has turned a corner. In the first instance, Liberians are tired of war. Yes, there may be pockets of dissent, there may be pockets of dissatisfaction, and one has to expect that. There may even be some expression in more ways than one of some dissatisfaction. Again, that's to be expected. But I think the majority of our people are ready to retain, to seize back their dignity, their honor. They're ready to work They're starting to show it. If you go into the city today, you go into the country today, you see much more economic activity. Many of you here who have been very supportive of the development effort through your remittances are beginning to repair your homes, and we can see that. Many of you are returning, and we want to encourage more and more of you to bring back your skills and your talents and to join us in the process of nation building. There is a certain excitement in the air that says, once again, Liberians can take control of their destiny. Once again, we can put the ugly past behind us. Forgiving, if not forgetting, to make sure that we do not repeat the mistakes of the past. So my message to you is one of hope and promise, is bringing to you the greetings from all the compatriots there who have in fact borne the brunt of the difficulties and the destruction and the death, but who now look to you to join hands with them as they begin to seize this new opportunity, this new opening, this chance for change, the chance for reform, the chance to rebuild, the chance once again for Liberians to be proud to be Liberians. I urge you to join this movement. I urge you to let us all make it a renaissance in which every Liberian strives to be what they want to be, in which we all work collectively and individually, using that which God has given us so abundantly to respond to the needs of our people. That's our message to you today. I've talked a lot over the last week. And I said as I walked in here, no, I'm not going to have to talk again. But the message is the same. The message is consistent. And the message is just as I've tried to summarize. So we just wish you will catch on to this. With which you will join us in moving ahead, working together for the good of our country. I have people here with me, so many in the delegation that are part of this great effort at National Renewal. And you know them all. Some of them are right here. Richard Talbot, who's the chairman of the National Investment Commission. Anthony Sayre, who's the Minister of Finance. Madison Tukba, the National Security Advisor. Nada B. Davis, the coordinator for our partnerships arrangements. Liberian Development Corporation, Dr. Boyma Fambule, advisor to the president. Others are here, you know, former Ambassador Bull, who's now Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs. Noong Kedor, representing the other branch of government, a member of the legislature from Nimba County. You know Ambassador Charles Minor and his wife Comfort. And of course, those who are upcoming in my footsteps with a little ways to go, my grandchildren. Thank you all very much, and I'll pass it back to you, and we'll take it from there. I'm sure those in my delegation will be very happy to talk to you to respond to some of the tough issues and tough questions that you may raise. And so, thank you all.
Thank you so much, Madam President. And you graciously agreed to take a few questions, or maybe you're knowing your... good sense, you'll pass them off to your colleagues here. But it's my pleasure to welcome as our moderator Julia Wilson, who is the founder, managing director of Wilson Global Communications. She's the executive producer and host of Julia Wilson on the Continent, and I assume that means the continent of Africa. But we're very pleased that you'll moderate our session today.
Thank you very much, Her Excellency President Sirleaf, and to President Solomon and guests, welcome. It is possible, if justifiably so, to assume many things about the future of Liberia, a nation with Liberia's recent history, and be entirely wrong. But after having been there to produce a series of television programs on this re-emerging nation and President Sirleaf and interviewing numerous of Liberians, I have come to the conclusion that there is a free world worth of difference between a nation like Liberia and the real Liberia of today, March 21st, 2006. It is a nation bearing a legacy of violence and chaos for about 15 years. One where families have been brutally torn apart, where homes and livelihoods are but memories that can only be approached through a bloody fog of recollections that no one wants to endure. As a result, those spots were approached through dreams of a new future. It is a nation where wealth is abundant, but rendered dormant by conflict and corruption. It is a nation of paupers literally sitting on gold mines of economic empowerment, capable of resurrecting a region for the political hurdles they have until now been unable to leap. Now comes a new day brought into being through blood and sweat, empowered by faith, determination, and commitment, courage, patience, and resilience, embodied in the election of an historic figure whose life has seemingly led her and her people to this moment of destiny. Despite the wounds of war, the dislocation and the destitution we observed in Liberia, my television camera crew and I returned from Liberia this past January following the inauguration with an undeniable conviction that Madam Ellen Sirleaf's election as president has the capacity to neutralize all that might hinder the success of that nation, that its people, especially its women and like-minded men, regardless of their circumstances, have been overtaken by a new conviction, by a renewed sense of hope and optimism, that opportunity for healing and recovery has knocked loudly at the doors of their lives. Just as important, there seems to be a confirmation of their feelings in the attitude of world leaders and heads of states who clamored to validate the moment of President Sirleaf's inauguration, to say nothing of the scores of private sector business leaders for whom Liberia also represents opportunity and hope for a new direction for Africa. And recently here in the United States, in a rare moment of history, President Sirleaf addressed a bipartisan joint session of the 109th United States Congress and received about 20 standing ovations. It was an indication that the American people also have an appreciation for this woman of great courage and leadership. Hope and opportunity, two of the key byproducts of freedom and democracy, were seen in the eyes of the children and the youth, now have a fresh toehold on the west coast of Africa through the African Republic of Liberia. And for the first time in a long time, Liberians are enjoying peace. The floor is now open for questions that can be posed to President Sirleaf and her staff. We'd like to take questions from the audience and also our webcast viewers. There are two microphones on both sides of the room. And what we'd ask is that you would identify yourself by giving your name and your affiliation, and make your questions, please, short and concise so that more people can ask questions. Is there a first question already? Okay. State your name, please.
The name is Leslie Norman Cole. Madam President, welcome. First of all, thanks for representing us well. You have all of us feeling so proud. Since you have spoken so much, my question will be in the form of a statement, and you can confirm or refute. There has been an issue about a Nigerian general serving as the head of the Liberian army. The issue, as I understand it is there is a project to restructure the Liberian Army. That project is being funded by our international partners. As one who has worked for international partners, the funding sources, i.e. in this particular case, the U.S. and Nigeria, are the ones who
working together for the good of our country. I have people here with me, so many in the delegation that are part of this great effort at national renewal. And you know them all?
No, it's not totally correct. First of all, let's be clear. There is no Liberian army. There's been total demobilization of the army. There is a Nigerian general who is a military advisor. There is also an American colonel who serves in the same equal capacity. Both of them will be managing the process that you refer to, the process of recruitment and training of the new army. The reason for having both is that while the U.S. government is, through a memorandum of understanding, in charge of this project, we still need an African person who understands the African situation and the African perspective and the and knowledge of the Liberian soldiers Nigeria haven't served. We also recognize the fact that we have our own people, security people in training, both in Nigeria and in the United States. And this was to recognize the role which the two countries play in a restructuring of our forces.
Thanks for the clarification.
We'll take one from this side. Actually, why don't we take a couple at a time? We'll take two on this side.
My name is Beverly Goyekison, and I'm the founder and president of the Liberian Crisis Center for Abused Women and Children. Over the past 2 years, my organization has been trying to help stop violence against women and children in Liberia. My question, men and Liberians in this country and around the world are aware of last week where you had the situation of five UN or UNIMIL contractors gang raping two Liberian women. Even because of the limited legal system we have, managed to leave the country. Madam President, as a woman, what definite plans you have in helping to address or stopping rape, abuse, and sexual assault of Liberian women, and especially in the hands of UNIMIL contractors or UN troops in Liberia currently? Thank you.
Let me say that there is now a law against rape, and I am committed to the enforcement of that law. In the specific case you mentioned, it's most unfortunate that it's a Liberian member of the legislature who facilitated those persons who had violated our women getting from the custody of the police and being able to leave the country. Before I left, I discussed this with a special representative of the Secretary General, who himself is aggrieved at this violation. And he's taken action. When I was at the Security Council on Friday and I met with the Deputy Secretary General, I brought this up to her. She, too, expressed concern. They're now working with the country that is concerned with those people to ensure that those men I brought back to Liberia to be able to face justice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Cece Barnard, and I'm the organizer of the Liberian Development Tax Campaign Proposal, which I registered with the Liberian Embassy some time ago. My question is that everywhere I go, talking and meeting with Liberians and singing, Liberians really want to pay some money to our new government to make some finance to help redevelop our country. And my proposal, and I'm asking you, Madam President, is it possible for your government and team of finance officers to create a system whereby we who live out of the country can begin to pay on a monthly basis a minimum amount towards a Liberian Development Fund for the development of Liberia?
Music to my ears. But I love the finance minister talk about the mechanics.
Music to all of our ears, that would be very welcome. Clearly, the diaspora, as the president said, has been a big source of support over the long years of war. And we know that many of you want to come home and cannot do so, but are looking for ways to contribute any way you can. And certainly that would be very welcome. I've just received a proposal. We'll look at that. There was some talk, I know, among some people of maybe putting together contributions that would help our embassies, for example, that are helping to make the case for us abroad. And that's one way to use some of those resources. But there are many other ways. And so we'll gladly look at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take one more from that side, and then we have a couple of emails that came in from the webcast that we'd like to share.
Good afternoon, President Sirleaf. My name is Rob Telpaley. I am a Liberian based in Washington, D.C., with the African-American weekly called the Washington Informer newspaper. And as my capacity as assistant editor, I'm interested most likely in bridging the divide between Africans and African-Americans. I've often heard you speak a lot about how Liberia is endowed with natural resources. My question is, how do you plan to safeguard Liberia and its people, as well as its resources, from exploitative multinational corporations such as Firestone in the country today?
I think when we canceled some 80-something forestry concession agreements in the last month, we sent a strong signal that this was not business as usual, and that we were concerned that anyone who is given the right to exploit our country's assets do so while protecting the national interest without prejudice to their right to make profits, which is important in the business world. I think also our commitment to review all the agreements that were signed in the past few years to make sure the bogus ones and the ones that do not meet the national interest test will be, wherever possible, renegotiated. And so I can just say to you that the commitment, my own personal commitment, the commitment of the entire team, is to ensure that, one, we do promote an environment for private capital and private investment to take place, but two, that we expect that there will be a mutuality in interest, both in terms of the investors as well as the nation.
I will take one from the webcast. Are there any roadblocks to effectively moving Liberia into a vital, self-sustaining country? And we'll take another one.
The roadmap to lead Liberia into a viable...
Are there any roadblocks?
Any roadblocks? Oh, many roadblocks. I mean, the roadblocks we say stumbling blocks are stepping stones. Roadblocks are challenges. And the challenges are the ones I pointed out. We've got thousands and thousands of young people that are vulnerable and could be recruited again to start another war. We've got to respond to their needs and put them in productive endeavor and put them in training and in school. We've got to attract private capital and private investment to create jobs. 85% unemployment is a recipe for disaster. And clearly with a government that itself has 60,000 civil servants, more than, what, four times what it was in the time when our revenue is simply less than one-third of what it was, it's a big challenge to create jobs unless we can create the environment. So those are some of the obstacles, but like I say, we call them challenges, and we've got to come up with the policies and the measures that would enable us to surmount those obstacles.
Thank you. Here's one more. During your inauguration speech, you said that corruption was public enemy number one. What is being done to rid Liberia of corruption and increase transparency and good governance?
We've started by requiring all public officials to declare their assets That's being done. We've drafted a code of conduct, and that code will be legislated. That will require people to abide by certain standards and to suffer the penalties prescribed in that code if they violate the public trust. We are on an obligation with our partnership arrangement called GMAP to undertake certain audits, and if we find strong evidence of violation of trust, there will be those who will, you know, who will, in accordance with the law, have to, you know, have to be brought to book for this violation. We hope we're lucky enough to get them to voluntarily repatriate that which they have squirreled away. And we'll be working on that too. And then again, we'll set the example. I think more importantly, the example at the top, the example on the part of all of us who form part of the team, will send a strong signal to everybody that things are going to be different and corruption will not be tolerated. There is an answer. But one more thing, because I'm always careful to point out that we also have to do something about compensation. We cannot expect to pay public officials $20 a month and tell them to collect $2 billion in custom duties and think that they're going to stay. So we also have to, you know, the merit system needs to be introduced, and we need to make sure people get a living wage to be able to feed their families and send their children to school. That's all part of the recipe. Yes.
Your question, please.
Thank you very much. I'm Professor Dr. Vivian Fambule-Seaton, and I'd like to welcome Her Excellency Mrs. Sirleaf to Washington. I'm a media consultant, and I think most Liberians know me as Pipshin, having worked for the Voice of America for many, many years. I don't have a question today. I'm a Liberian woman, and I think I express the sentiments of all Liberian women when I say, Madam, we are extremely proud of you.
Yes, indeed.
And each of us, in our own little way, thought of something that we can do for you so that you can know how we feel about you. Some of us cooked a nice dinner for you as we ate at the reception. Some of us made calendars. And my little group, my colleagues and friends and relatives and collaborators, we got together, and in 1 week we produced this magazine with the
Whoa.
Original photo of Mrs. Sirleaf. I'd like to present you with a copy of it, and we wish you well. We wish you Godspeed and God's blessing as you lead that state, that ship of state, which we know will not be a very easy task, but we know that the Lord will be with you and that you will be successful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one more question over here.
Good afternoon. My name is Enid Cole, and I'm with the International Finance Corporation, the World Bank. Congratulations, Madam President, on your election, and thanks for bringing hope, aspiration, and optimism to the Liberian people. I have two questions, one for you and one for Mr. Talbot. The one to you is on a social issue. The population of Liberia, post-Monrovia, conflict Monrovia, has increased, resulting in large squatters in both public and private properties. How does the government intend to resolve this delicate yet serious problem, and what incentives will be given to citizens to encourage them to return to their homes in different parts of the country? I will now address Mr. Talbot, and then you all can answer. Mr. Talbot, the establishment of the Free Zone Industrial Park at the National Port Authority was intended to attract both local and foreign investments. Does the government intend to revitalize this facility in the process of pursuing investors? I'll take your answer.
The whole question about land is a very, very serious problem. It's not only the squatting and the illegal possession of land, but we also have to look at the land tenure system and see whether that serves best our goals of production and productivity. And so what we are going to do is establish Land Reform Commission that will look into these, going beyond, like I said, trying to find out where illegal lands, trying to go back. And it's a very difficult problem, man, because much of the records on this, you know, the deeds and all of that have been destroyed. Bogus deeds have been prepared by unscrupulous people. Land has been sold to different people so many times, you know, sometimes by those who don't really own them. But we've got to sort it out. And a commission will try to look into that and see how we can, you know, how we can try to restore rightful land to those, to rightful owners, what we can do about the land tenure system to encourage more production by maybe introducing new methods than a collective system. So it's a problem. We got to work on it.
Okay, Mr. Tolbert.
Thank you very much for that question. One of the first things I did when I took over my job was to go and visit the facilities that fall under my administration, my area. The industrial zone and the industrial park are parts of the National Investment Commission's properties that I happen to manage. I don't know when last you were in Liberia, but unfortunately, the industrial park is now a town occupied by, I would say, at least 50,000 people. All right? We could try to move them, but I think it would be a tremendous social political problem. My personal preference, I have not discussed this with the president, would be to try to find a new site. To move 50,000 people, I think, would be an almost impossible job. There are other areas of the country that I think could be very viable for an industrial park and for a free zone area. The Chinese ambassador has been to see me. He's very, very interested in helping Liberia develop an export zone, something similar to what they have in China. And he's looked at various areas, including Buchanan especially. But I think, obviously, we do need to be an export-oriented country. We do need to use Liberia as a base for export into the sub-region. And also, we need to revitalize the industrial park. There are lots of industries that want to come in. They don't have land. They don't have places to go. We'll have to find the places for them. Fortunately, the country is large, as you all know. We're only using less than 10% of our arable land. But I think using the existing facilities at the industrial park would be a very difficult job.
Thank you. Take one from that side.
Thank you. His Excellency, Your Excellency, thank you so much for the manner in which you have honorably projected Liberia's image in the international community. We are so proud of you. My name is Maurice Kofa. I represent the Liberia Environmental Watch, and of course my question has to do with the environment. According to the UN statistic that was done in 2003, the life expectancy in Liberia is 48 years. For every 1,000 live births, about 250 to 300 die. Less than 25% of our population have access to safe drinking water. And the list goes on. Sometime ago, you spearhead a cleanup campaign in Liberia. I know you, your administration, have inherited a whole lot of the pieces, and you are trying to put them together. But my question to you, Madam President, what is it your administration has in plan to do to give Liberia a clean bit of health? And another question is, the Liberia Environmental Protection Agency has not been fully constituted. Is there any reason why?
You know, it takes time for us to develop the kind of agenda that addresses all of the long-standing structural, systemic problems of the country. We're working on it. If I tell you I have the answer to everything right now, I would not be telling you the truth. We have to formulate a long-term development agenda that addresses health needs, education needs, economic infrastructure needs, you name it. It's like starting all over again. We're just 2.5 months. You know, we beg you, give us more time. even the Environmental Protection Agency, it hasn't been reconstituted. You're right, it's not fully constituted in the past. We have not even reconstituted yet, but that's something that we will be working on very shortly. And if you're eligible, put in your application.
Uh, I'd like to say the people that are in line right now to ask questions, we will try to accommodate your questions and maybe one more from the webcast, but we'd ask that that no one else join the line. How about that? One from the webcast, what are the government's proposals for health care and HIV/AIDS?
On HIV/AIDS, people may recall during the inauguration address I said a commission on HIV/AIDS would be set up. We just discussed this issue with President Bush to get U.S. support through the PEPFAR program, and he mentioned the Global Fund and all of that. But there is an ongoing program. There's already a committee that's working on HIV/AIDS, trying to sensitize people through education, through messages and billboards and announcements on the air. So we're doing that. The incidence has risen considerably now, 12%, up from 4% a few years ago. So we need a more aggressive program to address it, and we need to do that. What's the other one? Health.
HIV.
HIV, I just responded to. Mm-hmm. Health is a question of coming up with our whole health sector policies. Again, like in the other case, that is being formulated through the new health team that's headed by Dr. Walter Guanagalli, and we expect that it's going to be part of the whole development agenda, which we'll be looking at in time for our new fiscal year as we start July 1. We hope to have all of those policies and structures ready to announce to the public and to form part of our budget cycle in our discussion with the legislature.
Okay. One more from the webcast. There are many questions on the role of the diaspora in helping Liberia. How will Liberians with dual citizenship be able to work in Liberia, and how can people living in the diaspora help Liberia?
They've already been a big help. I mentioned remittances. There are figures that talk about $20, $25, $30 billion that goes to Liberia annually from you in this room, from people all over this country. And in recognition of this contribution you've made, as you know, we've appealed to the U.S. government to continue to provide you with protective status so that, you know, you can be able to and to do that. And I can say to you that not only did we talk about it when we spoke to the Congress, but I also discussed this with President Bush, and he has given some instructions, you know, for that. So keep sending the remittances. That's part of the deal. But we do want some of you to come home too. I mean, you can weigh whether, you know, your taxes or your remittance, which one places ahead of us.
Thank you, Madam President. One over here.
Thank you. Madam President, my name is George Kokodo Jr. I represent the Liberian Civil Liberties Union. And I must say I'm very proud when you presented to the U.S. legislature and said that while we are aware of national reconciliation, we cannot sacrifice justice. I think that was very important to our organization. And also you said Liberia is not asking for patronage. My question is of two concerns. I read in the paper, and the Liberian Analyst newspaper quoted your labor minister, Samuel Kofi Wu, as saying that two laws, two labor ministry regulations, one of them is the PRC decree number 12 and 1505 of the labor regulation, will be submitted to the Liberian legislature for it to be made part of the Liberian laws. And these two laws, one is stopping or forbidding worker strike in Liberia, and the other one is empowering employers to hire and fire at will without cost. And we think it's going to be an affront to the Liberian people, and the Liberian Civil Liberties Union is prepared to challenge these laws in the court of laws in Liberia. Point number two, recently I also read that the office of the legislature was broken into by officers of the Liberian National Police to effect an arrest. My question is, are we looking forward to a police state again, or what is going to be done about that so that Liberians abroad will not be afraid to return home. Thank you.
Well, I tell you, I think you ought to check your facts. If Kofi Wooks talks about those two laws, he's talking about legislation to repeal them.
Yeah, but
that's how come we just qualify for the general system of preferences.
Okay, thank you for that. I think the people I read said to ratify them. So let's move on to the issue of the police officer going in the office of the national legislature.
Can I ask Ms. Kador, because I don't know about this.
Yes.
Well, you know, the legislature has some powers. If any police broke into a legislative office, I'm quite sure they're going to hold them in contempt in no time. And I will support the legislature in that action. But any police that did that is a rogue police.
Over here. My name is Lori Robinson. I'm a reporter for The Crisis, the magazine of the NAACP. In your opening comments, you mentioned that you want to make sure that no Liberian ever feels unequal so that you don't have the kind of sentiments that would fester violence again. I've spoken with Liberians who've said everything from our problems stem purely from economic inequality to ethnic tensions are a major part of the problems that lead to violence. And so I'd like to hear your perspective about causes of violence in order to prevent them. Is this something that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission will be dealing with? How can you really heal the country authentically? Is it necessary to address ethnic differences, or is it really just economic differences? And then secondly, very quickly, I know people have talked about the Liberian diaspora a lot. African Americans, for example, were a very important constituency in the anti-apartheid movement. Or maybe some of your staff would like to address this, are there any specific ideas or programs or plans that you have to reach out to African Americans? Who could African Americans contact to invest or participate or volunteer? Those are my two questions.
And can I ask before Madam President answers that we limit our questions to one question per person, since we have quite a few people to listen to today?
I'm going to ask Dr. Famulet to pitch in on this one. You know, the root causes of conflict and what we can do.
How you do? Thank you, Madam President. You know, we have a position in Africa that the problem, we have two major problems fundamental to the causes of backwardness and paralysis in Africa. One has to do with the quality of leaders that nations produce. And I, for one, coming from a political science background, I believe that the philosopher King is best suited to govern the polity. In the case of our choice for president, we have selected one such person. And the way she's dealing with the questions, you can see that, of course, she has a focus, she has a perspective. Now, we have a case of elites struggling for dominance in all societies. It doesn't necessarily have to be between two classes. You see, because if you take the poor people from the various tribal groups, they don't have enmity towards each other. When you have elites struggling for power, they use the people to promote their own selfish interests. We've always gone over and above this argument that the various groups of people, the classes. Just take, for example, the colonial boundaries in many African countries cut across various tribal groups. The Vai people in Cape Mau do not even see the Vai people in Sierra Leone as their enemies. They are the brothers. The Kram people in Liberia do not see the Crown people in Ivory Coast as enemies. They are the brothers. The Loma, the Gio, the Bassa people, if they're in the market as market women, selling their wares, they're all under the rain together. They don't discriminate. When the elites want to take power, they turn to these poor people and tell them, you are different, and then use their personal interest as a tribal interest. No, that is not the problem here. Our argument, like the late great Dr. Blyden argued, is the question of the consciousness of our people. The elite must be focused on what we want. We want nation building. We had an election quite recently, and what was put to rest once and for all was this whole idea that our people are divided on tribal sentiments. Madam Salih won almost 60% of the votes. Those votes came from right across the country, different tribal groupings. As a matter of fact, we decided to support her because we felt that she presented the best hope for redeeming our generation. That we have been condemned, we have been accused of so many things. We had a choice. A woman of intellect, of brilliance, of connection, of experience. On the other side, a young man who only knows how to play football. And we were not going to gamble the destiny of our country by going with somebody based on sentiments. No, the problem in Africa has always been the problem of the ambition and the recklessness of the political elites. Until the elites can realize that in building a nation, they have to bring people together and develop paradigms that the people see themselves as one in the process of nation building, we're going to have problems. So no, I don't think our problem has been the problem of tribal differences. It has been the problem of people using tribal differences to promote themselves. And I always, and before I sit down, I always ask people, some of our poor people, these your brothers who come from America, England, France, and say to you that we are different from these people. When they become ministers, how many of them have invited you into the living room? How many of them have invited you to ride the cars? If you see a man who is a successful businessman in Liberia, if he's boozy, he's vibe, he's whatever, when they meet in the Rotary Club, they don't talk about tribe. They talk about advancing the business interest. So where's the difference? We don't agree, and we think Africa will have to bypass these false premises and try to build a composite nation state. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think you answered her question. Okay. We will go on to another question on this side of the room.
My name is Rupel Marshall. Good evening, Madam President. I bring you greetings from my mother, Mrs. Rachel Marshall, my sisters, Mari and Rosita, and my brother, Morris. I respectfully propose, Madam President, that your government pursue a plan to develop a protocol with the United States government and employers in this country, whereby able Liberians desirous of making contributions to the development of Liberia in specific areas but cannot totally divorce themselves from their employment in the United States be granted leave of absence while retaining their income. And
do you have a question? Is there a question?
And are allowed to return to their jobs on completion of 6 to 18 months of service in Liberia. If a particular employer cannot enter into such an arrangement, that the protocol provides funds to fully compensate the Liberian expert.
Excuse me, sir.
Madam President,
excuse
what
me,
is
sir,
your initial response to this proposal?
Noted, we'll take it on advisement.
Thank you.
Okay, we only have about 10 more minutes, so I'm going to have time for just one question from that side and one question from that side.
Okay. Madam President, it's an honor and a privilege to have this opportunity to talk to you. My name is Florence Fumbler Harris. a member of the Umbrella Management Group, made up of a group of Liberian professionals, and also from the Bowie State University. Recently, the Bowie State University, a historically black university in Maryland, was awarded a grant to go to Liberia to help our brothers and sisters foster the system of entrepreneurship. As a consultant with Bowie State University and during our research, we came across this micro, M-I-C-R-O, loan program. That is a program that is designed to help our Liberian brothers and sisters who cannot raise the funds to operate small, petty businesses. Currently, the United Nations on Refugee Program is involved in such an endeavor. Madam President, do you see any plans after the UN for the Liberian government to undertake such a program to help our brothers and sisters?
The microloan program is very much present in Liberia right now. It's ongoing. It can be expanded, but certainly microcredit is something that our development bank and others have been doing, will continue to do, and they're talking to other institutions where some of those methods can be adopted to expand it. So, yeah, it's very much alive.
Thank you.
Thank you. One last question.
Thank you. My name is George S. Banks. I'm president and CEO of Century Security International, based in Washington, D.C. My first question actually goes to Mr. Solomon and Her Excellency Ella Johnson Sirleaf, our president. First of all, I want to thank you. I want to congratulate you for the election. I want to thank you for assuming the leadership of Liberia. But my first question actually goes, and it has to do with the rule of law, because I'm in safety and security. And the only reason why things are the way they are today in the U.S. is the rule of law. How do you intend on enforcing the rule of law alongside with your Minister of Justice?
To enforce the law. We've just reconstituted a Supreme Court, put people in there that we think have the competence. They know what the statutes are in the law. We've told them that the judiciary will be an independent branch of government with no interference and no influence from the executive branch. We expect them to start a process of looking at the laws and to see where some laws need to be repealed, changed, and so the rule of law will be enforced in keeping with the laws that exist and new laws that will be made to strengthen our processes that protect people's freedoms and people's rights and gave recourse to the judicial system. Beyond that, I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, actually, I was privileged to have been a special assistant to one of the senators, Senator Archie Bernard of Monserrato County in Liberia, for a couple of years while I was there. And I see that sometimes we set the rules and, people break them and, no one cares. But I hope that you will definitely address that strongly.
I'm committed to, I took an oath of office to defend, protect the Constitution and the laws of the Republic, and that's what I will do.
Thank you very much, Madam President.
Okay, Madam President would like to stay and finish the line, so we will finish up the two lines.
Okay. Thank you very much. Madam President, congratulations and welcome. My name is Jacob Collingwood. I represent the Dynamic Corporation. And what we do is we take part in reconstruction and rebuilding. And we'd like to know, Madam President, how possible is it going to be to break down those barriers, the red tips and everything, to be able to bid to have a part in this reconstruction process?
I think the two people in charge of that process are right there. If you've given them your brochure, go talk to them afterward, those two.
Okay, please.
My name is Abraham James, and after many years in the United States,
I went to Liberia for the elections and then the inauguration. I am planning to return home permanently. I am here tonight. I heard about this very, very important event here this evening, and I decided to come here. Unfortunately, I have not come bearing any gift, but I have come to commend Her Excellency for the quality leadership, the effective and efficient leadership that she is providing the Liberian nation. And it's something that has attracted worldwide attention. And I wish I had a nice gift to come with this evening, but I really am very, very thankful for what is happening to our country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Professor James, the best gift you can give to us is to come home and serve your country.
Thank you, Madam President. My name is Solomon Myers, a political historian from, I presently reside in Canada. I drove 2 days to get here to get to see you. And I have my own security firm in Canada. I'm a director. Plus, I am director for developing opportunity for the vulnerable in West Africa. That's a non-governmental organization. I guess I send in some Medicare equipment to charge to the government, which never arrived, and I don't know what happened. But I came here with in mind with something to say, but for some reason it just slipped my mind. But
okay, thank you very much for your kind comments.
But I remember when I was a kid. We used to admire you people, and I thought about Clarence Cecil Dennis.
Do you have a question?
He said, when you come here with a speech and you see the crowd and things changes, you can change your speech all the time. But my question is, I'm very surprised that Richard Tolbert is not in a position to enforce the law in a way that we'll be able to reduce the amount of mosquitoes in Monrovia.
Thank you very much.
I mean,
thank you very much. Next question over here, please. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for your comments. Next question, please.
Hello.
No, don't worry. I think you lost the script.
Yeah, I lost it. I lost it, but sure. But Richard, you got to do better than that. There are too many people congested, and we need space, and we need liberty. For this reason, it will make security very easy for us to enforce security in Monrovia and reduce mosquitoes.
Afterward, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Congratulations, Madam President. I'm watching Harris Bruce, and I currently work for a federal housing agency in Washington called the Federal Home Loan Bank, as well as with Neighborhood Reinvestment Corporation. Both of my agencies or bosses from my employers, they want to know how can they support in the housing in Doha. These are our housing agencies. They want to know what mechanism have you set up for redeveloping housing, because this is one of the basic need and also an economic development activity. So my question is, how can they help bring development or housing development to Liberia?
If we're talking private sector, you need to talk to Mr. Talbert there. He can tell you. If we're talking about supporting it through public service and through the government, then you need to talk to the finance minister there. But you're absolutely right. Housing is very essential, you know, at all levels of income.
And we have both.
Whatever programs you got will be very welcome. Just talk to them.
Okay. Thank you.
There is
There is a question from the email webcast viewers about diversity in the government. Questions on opposing WAOIS in the government, disabled individuals, and I'll lump them all together, and Muslims in the government. Are there any plans for diversity, or is the government being diversified?
Government is very diversified. The government is very inclusive. We try not to have this division of, you know, Muslims and Christians and crowns and crew and something. But that said, we are committed to a government of inclusion, and every tribe, every county has representation in the government. And, you know, it's the chief, my own chief of staff, Morris Dukley, is a Muslim. So, but we don't play that up because we say we go for Liberians who have the integrity, the competence, and we don't care what tribe they are, what county, you know, so. But.
Thank you, Madam President. My name is Jimmy Eastman. On behalf of my family and my mother, Rachel, we extend our congratulations and appreciation for your taking on this task. I'm also a member of the Black MBA holders here in the U.S. and a member of the Liberian community here. Our concern is that though you have led a career, an impeccable career over the years, we find that many leaders of the past, many people in position of the past failed us. Though they had the academic qualifications, their ethics compromised their ability to perform. We know that you're constrained to use the resources available to you. What we ask is, have you begun to devise a mechanism that will screen out these people who will not be dedicated, who will not be leaders, who will not take Liberians to heart but merely want to serve their own purposes? Thank you.
I talked about the code of conduct and the other measures that we're taking to ensure that people meet certain standards of accountability. We've committed to have the entire government machinery transparent, accountable, and that will mean making all government transactions open to the public. If at any time there's any evidence that anyone holding a position of public trust violates that trust, you can be assured that that person will feel the brunt of the law. That person will be separated from the government service in no time. I make that pledge.
Thank you. Yes.
Madam President, my name is Jerome Sheldon. I'm a member of the Umbrella Management Group. I'm also the Hazardous Material Manager at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Brunswick, Georgia. I've been there for about 4 years, and I did the same thing for the Navy Academy stuff in Annapolis, Maryland. I want to address the issue of environmental stuff in Liberia right now. I've been trying to get my project over through the EPA and stuff like that, but apparently there's nobody in there right now who's the director of the EPA. But I do have a gift for you. I wanted to rent my service free to the Liberian government, you know, Liberian people, and as a matter of fact. So that's what I want to say to you. Can I just...
Thank you. Keep
is that
free? Thank you. One last
that's
question.
My service is rental free. I'm ready to go back home.
I'll hold you to that.
Our last question.
Hello, Madam President.
That's fine.
I'm Sieta Victor, webmaster of the Liberian Connection website. It is rumored in the IT world that the Africa One ring, the fiber optic ring around Africa, that it has been laid in Liberia. Is this true? And if it is not true, does your government have any plans in the immediate future of connecting to that ring? And when do you guys plan to do that? Do you know what the Africa One ring is?
I think it has to do with telecommunication, something that I've read about. But if I tell you I know more than the fact that I read about some ring, I maybe Natty B can answer that one. But I mean, I can just tell you if the ring is good, we'll wear it. If it's not good.
Madam President.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming. And thank you, Madam President and President Solomon, for being here.